From the KLYT broadcast studio, this is ABQ Connect. Your input on today's topic is important to us. Join in the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE. ABQ Connect.
Thanks for joining us on ABQ Connect. Tomorrow on the show, we'll get an update from Man Up. The next Man Up event is tomorrow night at Calvary Church. Although it's on the campus of Calvary Church, the men of New Mexico are invited from churches all over the place. And we've had hundreds of men come to these events every other month. We'll get the details on tomorrow's ABQ Connect. And also want to remind you about an opportunity to provide clean water for villages in Asia through GFA World Jesus Wells Clean Water Campaign. A great opportunity for you to join with them and provide, clean water, which in turn has a great impact on these communities, which include practicing safe hygiene and supporting healthy immune systems and preventing the spread of diseases. Also, just a reminder, we've said this several times, you know, in a lot of places in the world, including many villages in Asia, the population there spend hours fetching water. And these wells all have a message on them, a plaque that includes the phrase living water. And it provides opportunity for the pastors that live near them to let the population know more about that living water mentioned on the well's plaque. If you want to find out more, here's a toll-free number. It's 1-855-513-2127. That's 855-513-2127. Or simply log on to klyt.fm. And while you're considering supporting GFA, close to 40 GFA churches in Manipur, that's northeast of India, have been destroyed by fire. There's considerable fighting amongst the tribal groups there. And we would encourage you to pray for God's protection for the missionaries, the workers who are compassionately ministering to the believers there, and for wisdom for the pastors ministering in that area as well. All right, we welcome into studio Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation. Paul, welcome back in.
Hey, good afternoon, Steve.
It's feels like it's been a while, but I guess, I don't know, about a month.
Just the usual month, yeah. Yep.
But we've got some interesting topics to cover today. And as always, Paul makes this information available on the website at errorsofenchantment.com. Most of what we're talking about today, you'll find the information, the complete blog from Paul at errorsofenchantment.com. And of course, another resource, riograndefoundation.org, to kind of get up to snuff on what the organization is up to. What's our first topic today, Paul?
Oh, it's anything you want it to be, but we can start off with usual subject, which is economic development and New Mexico's economy. Did you know it's Economic Development Week?
I did not know that, but I do know next week is Police Week.
All right.
To show our appreciation for those who protect us.
Well, those two issues can go hand in hand. I learned Economic Development Week was this week from an article written by Alicia Keys, the Economic Development Secretary here at the state of New Mexico. I've written since the legislative session concluded a lot because I've been thinking a lot about what happened and the way that whole session went down with all the money available and then the governor vetoing everything. And, you know, I've just been writing at National Review, Capital Matters, other New Mexico media outlets that the state really doesn't understand, and as policymakers and policy leaders do not have a fundamental understanding of how to develop the economy. And my piece at the National Review, the thesis was, we're like a lottery winner. The state of New Mexico is like a person that wins the lottery. You know, people who win the lottery have a long track record, unfortunately, of not making very smart decisions.
It's true.
With the money that they win. And New Mexico, you know, because they didn't change anything. You know, the lottery seems like a wonderful thing. I mean, I assume you would like to win the lottery, whether you play it or not. I would love to win the lottery. I think I would do a great job with all the money I would have coming into myself. But a lot of people who actually do that are unhappy. Yeah. They fritter away the money. They just did not prepare themselves for what they were going to do and how they were actually going to act in the real world. In New Mexico, our economic development policies and our politicians reflect that lack of basic understanding of what we're actually going to do or should do to improve our state, its outcomes, whether it's creating more jobs, high-paying jobs, more industries, more wealth, getting more people into the workforce so that they can create, you know, create their own wealth, education system, crime, you name it. Unfortunately, that largesse from the oil and gas industry that has continued to boost up New Mexico in its economic situation hasn't necessarily contributed to vastly better outcomes. So,
you know, Paul, what comes to mind when you say that, in thinking about what you said about the lottery, simply said, he who is faithful with little can be trusted with much. And you know, if we're not practicing wise spending in the first place, if we get a whole bunch of gobbly money from the lottery or oil or whatever, chances are we're going to do the same thing with it that we've done with the little bit that we had.
That, you know, the Bible has a lot of great lessons and a lot of wisdom in it, and there is no doubt that that is a reality. I know that there, I forget the actual story, but you know, if you trust somebody to, oh, say, go pick up your dry cleaning and you give them $5 or whatever that dry cleaning costs, and they do that well, and then you give them more and more responsibility, that's a development of a relationship based on trust and wisdom.
And but, character,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, exactly. And then, but if you see people who, and our politicians are a great example because they're out there putting these resources into things that don't necessarily make sense for the betterment of the state and our families and our overall outcomes, you probably can't trust them very far with a lot of other things either.
So is any of this related to the, I know we printed up a story to talk about the Holtec facility.
The Holtec facility is part of economic development. It's something that, first and foremost, you know, we're a statewide organization. We look at these issues all across the state, and it hits on two major issues. One is economic development. Like I just said, this is a facility that would store spent nuclear fuel in deep underground caverns in southeastern New Mexico, and what you think of maybe if you watch The Simpsons or something versus the reality of the spent nuclear fuel are two very different things. There's very, very high safety standards and, you know, excruciating detail that they operate under in order to keep this material safe and away from the public for not just decades, but centuries and even millennia. But this is 400 jobs, potential for about $3 billion of investments in southeastern New Mexico. It's a community that already is an economic engine for the state of New Mexico with oil and gas, but they want to diversify their economy, and justifiably so, create jobs outside of the oil and gas industry, which can be volatile at times. So it's got this Holtec nuclear storage facility has strong support in Carlsbad and Hobbs and the people and the elected officials. But among our governor, the legislature unfortunately passed an anti-nuclear storage law in the last session. Our representatives and senators, you know, Heinrich, Lujan, Grisham, or Lujan and Stansberry, all of them have really opposed this facility being located in New Mexico. And, you know, the second component, so there's economic development, is these are all people who profess to be pro-environment, green energy, renewable energy. But when it comes to zero carbon emissions fuel that actually can keep the lights on and do so in a way that's proven and successful, they suddenly don't want any part of it. And it's unfortunate because the environmental community, if we are going to do the things they want to do or even approximate it when it comes to cutting CO2 emissions, whether you think that's a fabulous idea or a bad idea or somewhere in between, nuclear is the way to go to solve our problems when it comes to energy development in a low carbon fashion. And, you know, we need to store the spent nuclear fuel somewhere. And New Mexico can be a part of that. And it's a community that, like I said, Southeast New Mexico is broadly supportive. So unfortunately, the facility was approved this week by the Nuclear Regulation Commission. That is a good thing. It means that
that has to be quite a process.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. These people work and study and propose and discuss for years and years and years. So this is theoretically the end of a very long process. Of course, there's legislation that passed. New Mexico's legislature was signed by the governor. It seems hard to believe that a court would say this facility cannot take place because suddenly they rushed to pass a bill at the very last second after more than a decade of study and analysis. If New Mexico wants to prevent a future facility, then this bill may apply to that. But you can't essentially retroactively, basically, because, you know, the sunk costs, as you say, are incredible to find this location, right, and all go through all the permitting hoops. And it's not just Holtec, the company. This is federal tax dollars and our money that is being used to find a facility to store this waste.
I would have to imagine Eddie Lee Energy Alliance. And here's a question, Paul. You mentioned Senators Heinrich and Lujan and Representative Stansberry opposing this, in spite of their, you know, green quote unquote credentials. Would we have to speculate why that would be, or do we know why they're opposing it?
It's easy to make statements like, we're not going to be the dumping ground for this, that, and the other, or, say that other states should be, the recipient of this. But I really just think it's the NIMBY issue when it comes down to it, not in my backyard. Huh. And it's a simple knee-jerk reaction that some of these politicians are having, and they think it'll pay off politically.
I don't know if I want to go here, but you might be safer around a facility like this than you will be next to your gas stove.
Yeah.
And I don't mind my gas stove.
Well, there's plenty to talk about gas and gas stoves here this week.
Okay. Any more on the Holtec facility?
We're
okay.
Good.
We're pretty close to a break. It's a good time to go to our break. When we come back, Paul, how about if we jump on the U.S. News? Is that U.S. News and World Report or U.S. News Best States Report?
We can the U.S. News Best States Report has a lot of variables, yeah, okay, and they focus on things that are core to New Mexico and our take on some of the state's challenges.
So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see where we rank and how it compares to states overall who rank near our ranking in that. We'll get to that and more with Paul Gessing of the Rio Grande Foundation coming up right after the break on ABQ Connect.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect. There's still time to join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE. ABQ Connect.
You're listening to a discussion between myself and Paul Gessing with the Rio Grande Foundation, which, by the way, I mentioned at the top of the show, a lot of the information and topics we're talking about come directly from Paul's blogging at errorsofenchantment.com. Would encourage you to go there, or riograndefoundation.org for more information. And we move on to our next look, a report that was unkind to New Mexico, ranking 47th overall on the list of best states. And that's, you know, I don't know. I don't think any of us want to hear that.
No. And the report is from U.S. News and World Report. They ranked the best states. You know, there's obviously a lot of different factors. You know, the best state for you or me might be where we're from, where our kids live, where our job is, those kinds of things. But what they look at, as you might imagine, is important issues like crime and education, healthcare, the natural environment, the economy, the fiscal state, like the budgetary state of New Mexico, infrastructure and opportunity. Now, our best score is 15th. That is fiscal stability. That's a direct relationship from oil and gas money that flows into this state. Education is the very worst aspect of our state as ranked by U.S. News and World Report.
We've talked a lot about
There's not a lot more to add or question about that. Crime, 47th. That's not something that anybody would quibble with in New Mexico. We have significant crime issues. The economy, 44th. That's definitely that definitely hits home. Now, infrastructure is one that I actually think they are a little generous. Now, there's others that I think they're a little mean, but you know, we gotta look through the variables, and that's something that I do for these reports. Infrastructure, well, broadband is one of the infrastructure items they look at. New Mexico is a very tough state for broadband. We're very spread out. We have a lot of poverty, a lot of different land management entities. It's just not a great state for broadband, but they put green energy in in infrastructure, which doesn't really make a lot of sense. And that probably gives us a boost where we shouldn't have one. On the other hand, our natural environment, I don't think there's any question we're better than 30 seconds. Yeah. I would put us in the top five, maybe even top, at least top 10.
Well, we always say there's more sunshine here than in the Sunshine State.
Exactly. Now, they ding us for our air quality, and I prepared for this, so I have a list of the states that the EPA says, at least this report cites, as having the worst air quality. Arizona, the worst. Doesn't strike me as true. California, well, LA used to, but California is a big state. I wouldn't say they have the worst air quality. Well, Nevada, New Mexico, Illinois, Utah, Colorado. Those aren't the worst states in air quality, in my opinion.
Yeah. I've lived in Chicago, and I've lived in Philadelphia. I lived in San Antonio, big city, and quite honestly, I wouldn't have said that was so bad. Certainly Chicago was Illinois on the list?
It was down at the bottom.
Okay.
The point remains that overall, this is still I think, worthwhile report. It has a lot of good information, and sadly, we're 47th between West Virginia and Mississippi. And it just points to the fact that we, in opportunity, 41st, it points to the fact that we need to reform our crime issues, and we can do a lot better. There's certainly challenges, but we can do better. Our education system, absolutely. Our economy as well. And some of these other factors, I think there are public policy solutions that are being ignored in Santa Fe. So, you know, we have these reports. They come out often, and they always tend to put New Mexico at the bottom of the good list and the top of the bad ones. And it's not because somebody somewhere at U.S. News and World Report or some other publication has it out for New Mexico. We need to get this inferiority complex out of our heads and understand that we have serious challenges. These are challenges that maybe as middle and upper middle class professionals don't suffer the same from, but our kids, their ability to find jobs and productive activities in New Mexico, be educated and be competitive, not just with other states, but across the entire globe. Those are real issues and real challenges, and they need to be addressed in Santa Fe.
And, you know, when we have opportunity and we bring up some of the issues, like, as I mentioned already, we frequently visited the topic of education and potential bills being passed in the legislature. It's one of those times when we're, you know, when the legislature is in session and they are considering these things. And even now, to connect with your representative to let them know where you stand on some of the issues that may impact some of these grades that we get. And then the other thing, Paul, and I think you and I both agree, depending on the study in whole or different aspects of the study, there's some spin doctors at work.
Absolutely. Yeah. Nobody can put together any single report and say, this is absolutely the definitive case for one state or another, or one city or another. You ultimately have to make your own decisions. And what we're here to do is to try to use the data available to make recommendations to the public and politicians for how they can do that. And we have plenty of those at heirsofenchantment.com and riograndefoundation.org.
Okay. And since we brought up the topic of education, which we've visited often, there was a blog that you wrote that I think would be related in that the headline on that reads, MLG, quote-unquote, to recreate largest statewide tutoring program per capita in country. So what is what's involved with this?
Yeah, so our education system is obviously a long-term, long-standing point of contention and challenge for the state. The governor has claimed that she's doing a moonshot and she's trying to improve results, and maybe she thinks that spending more money is the solution. I suspect that she knows better than that, but I don't think she really has any ideas that work within the existing system. However, in the outside the system scope of ideas like tutoring, and this was just a speech that she gave to the Albuquerque Chamber, so we don't know exactly what the details might be, but she, you know, talked favorably about some kind of tutoring system that would be in place to assist kids in getting them up to grade level and getting them performing at a higher level. I think it's worth considering. I definitely want to see the details. Like, yeah. I said, this was just laid out in a speech. Interestingly enough, Mark Ronchetti made a similar point in his campaign talking points about education. It's worth noting, of course, that New Mexico already spends a pretty high amount, over $15,000 per student on the public schools. And that's growing very quickly with the oil and gas money that we have. Results have not followed. So I would question the need for more resources in education. But on the other hand, if it, say, adds $1,000 to the cost of educating each kid in the state, but it actually moves the needle,
right,
then it's worth considering.
Yeah, and off the air, I brought attention to this with Paul. And the first thing that I thought when I saw this was, as a parent, which my kids are grown now, I've got grandchildren that are in private education or homeschooled, which I guess is private education. The first thought I had when I saw that, if there's going to be money put towards students each for a new tutoring program, I think I would ask and be interested in a voucher system where you could choose who's going to tutor your child with the money provided by the state. That'd be kind of interesting to see if that would be something that would be considered.
Yeah, and I think that should be a part of it. Obviously, convincing and making sure that this is a program that the kids who need it get it, and the families are engaged and willing to participate. And that's a challenge, because frequently what you find is that the kids who need additional time in the classroom or tutoring or whatever, their family is not as interested in doing the work that needs to be done to get that service for them. Whereas the kid that's performing in the 98th percentile and their parents want to get them to the 99th, well, they're all for the additional tutoring. And it's kind of like, well, what are we really doing here? And it's a very challenging thing for government to convince somebody to participate in educating and getting their kid up to speed in that system when they just don't have the interest in doing it. So there's a lot of work to be done, and I'm not under the starry-eyed notion that we don't have systematic additional challenges to face in this state, but our education system clearly has not gotten the job done, and it'll be interesting to see where she goes with this tutoring proposal.
Oh, Paul, and on the blog that you posted, the graph shows New Mexico spending's ranking at 28th at 15,000 per pupil. Not that it really matters, but the school system ranking at 51 is that Washington D.C. or Puerto Rico?
That's a good question. I believe it would be Washington D.C. Our system is consistently ranked at the bottom.
And if the one of the two of those that isn't included was put there, would we be at 52?
Well, I think we do beat out Puerto Rico. Okay. Puerto Rico is a Spanish-speaking island, so I think we're good on that one. We did perform at 52nd in the National Assessment of Educational Progress, which is a nationwide test given to students all across the country, but that's because they separated out the Department of DOD schools, so they do very well.
All right. Well, if you just tuned in, we're discussing various topics that impact our state with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation, and a lot of what we're talking about you will find on the errorsofenchantment.com website. Again, that is errorsofenchantment.com. Paul's blog's posted there. And we're going to come back and talk about a topic that is probably loved by most of us, right? Free money?
Absolutely. Everybody loves free money.
All right. It's coming up. Be one of the topics we cover after the break on ABQ Connect.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect. There's still time to join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE.
We are in the midst of a conversation with Paul Gessing. He's in studio with us from the Rio Grande Foundation, riograndefoundation.org. And the topics we are covering today, just about all of them, if not all of them, you will find the blog at errorsofenchantment.com to go into detail about some of the things that we're covering today. And when we went to the break, I mentioned free money. And yes, it is something that's being said, and whether or not it is actually what it seems to be. Paul, you probably have a better idea on the incentives given to us if we consider using solar power as a resident.
Yeah, and, it is largely free money in the sense that the state of New Mexico is giving, it's not free to us, the taxpayers, but we have a solar rebate program that's capped at $12 million annually, and people can apply for it when they put a solar panel or solar system on their roof. It's a 10% credit. And the problem, as it is explained by the Albuquerque Journal recently, is that there's a limit on this to $12 million. The clear concept behind the article and the writer's opinion is that we should just revoke that cap and maybe do $24 million or $36 million or heaven forbid more than that. And that's a strategy, but the idea that it should be up to the rest of the taxpayers of New Mexico to help you pay for your solar panels, I realize that a lot of people claim that they're the green solution and that they're going to do all these wonderful things. But, you know, the people who benefit and pay for these solar systems are ultimately wealthier than average taxpayers. They're making good money, and they can afford these systems. So I find it hard to believe that in one of the poorest states in the country, we should be subsidizing the wealthiest among us. But that is the way things work in governments. And yes, for this year, the 2023 $12 million in solar credits under the state plan is already, it's already kaput. It's done. It was done by the end of March.
Do you have to wait to 2024 to even apply, or can you apply now for rebate in 2024?
I'm not an expert on this, but I think you, if you apply quickly enough at the beginning of the year, that's the way to do it, because there are people who thought they were in line for this program, got the solar panels put on their roofs, and then because the $12 million was already spent, they weren't able to get that money. And that stinks for them. There's no question.
And can those people, they can't.
They're not rolled over until the next year.
No, I mean, but can they reapply at the beginning of the next year?
Well, I think they've already put the panels on, so they're...
So you have to get the get approved before you put the panels on.
That is my understanding, okay, of the, at least from the article as it was portrayed.
And, so, and actually, Paul, for, if someone does have a question about this, do you know the... you know, do they just call the, somewhere up at the state capitol, or...
I think you would just probably have to get online and
just, yeah, sure.
New Mexico solar tax credit. And, yeah, you can find out information there. And, like I said, I don't think this is particularly, you know, a lot of these solar provider people, you do have to watch. There's been, issues with some of the providers, and they'll give you the sunshine and rainbows kind of, you know, they want to sell you the product, but, you can go to the Solar Market Development Tax Credit through newmexico.gov, and that'll have information if you're concerned or interested.
The other thought that came to mind, and I don't know enough about these systems and how they actually work in order, but a question I would have, if you're approaching this not only from, you know, saving money and having lower energy costs, if that's the truth, if that's actually something that happens sometimes or most of the time. The other question I'd have is, if you're approaching it from a green direction, is, okay, so I'm guessing that these solar panels collect the energy from the sun, and then that is stored in a battery. That's speculation. I don't know how these work. And then a question would be, just like I would have for EVs, is as far as... green goes, well, how, you know, eventually these needs to be replaced, and where are they disposed of?
The latter is definitely a concern. Now, as I understand it, for some of these programs, you have to be connected to the power grid, and the utility ultimately kind of owns that power. If you want to be, you know, off the grid or whatever, and just rely on solar and battery, that's a different story, and I don't think you get the same subsidies.
Oh, but gotcha.
You
got to
check with your local, you know, do your research online, check with your solar provider,
and hope you found all the information. Yeah, you needed.
It's something that's critical to be well informed with all these things. Our issue is, you know, we're spending another $12 million. This is on top of, by the way, the state subsidy is on top of generous federal subsidies for solar. And, you know, our goal is to, by and large, make sure everybody competes on the same playing field when it comes to energy. First and foremost, we want the lights to stay on. Secondly, we want to do it in an affordable way. And, yeah, I think when you really strip out a lot of the subsidies and benefits and the intermittency of some of these so-called renewable sources of energy, the common sense response is you ultimately get to nuclear, as we discussed before, that is zero carbon and steady, consistent, affordable power.
All right. If you just tuned in, we're in the middle of a discussion with Paul Gessing with the Rio Grande Foundation. And the topics we've covered today so far, all found on the errorsofenchantment.com. As Paul continues to blog there, it's information you can revisit as you like. As you log on, you can also go to riograndefoundation.org. And another blog that Paul recently wrote back on May 4th reads, as New Mexico congressional delegation push massive 10-mile Chaco buffer, Navajo explicitly reject any buffer. So what is the buffer around Chaco about, Paul?
Yeah, well, there is an area in northwest New Mexico called Chaco Canyon. It's a site of Native American construction and settlement that's really unique, and it's on the World Heritage list of sites. It's a very, very important site. The question is, in that area is all blocked off for developments. It's treated, I think, basically as a national park would be treated. I don't understand why all the designations are different, but the idea is here that you have this area for Chaco Canyon, but there are questions about what to do in the area around Chaco Canyon. And a lot of environmentalists, our congressional delegation, they are very much behind limiting oil and gas activity in that area surrounding Chaco Canyon. And they just, our congressional delegation introduced a proposal in the Congress to eliminate it for 10 miles. So you have a large area, and then you take anything within 10 miles of that off limits. And it's interesting because this is a difference of opinion and viewpoint between our delegation and the people who actually own the mineral rights in those areas surrounding the Chaco Canyon. And that's Navajo Nation folks, people who are of the Navajo tribe and own those mineral rights and do not want to see their mineral rights become worthless. They would like to see the money and the prosperity, an estimated $194 million over the next 20 years, flow to themselves and their families. And it's a very unique issue because you have tribal interests pushing back against the narrative the media has sold us, as well as the environmental groups and our members of Congress.
I'm sitting here thinking, we've talked a little bit about nuclear waste and how to store it and whether or not, nuclear energy is a viable way to go if you, as far as the green advocates are concerned. At some point, you kind of feel like banging your head on the wall and, with all the things, what energy is okay? Can we rub sticks together? But that's going to produce a little smoke and probably not that either. It's just, it becomes frustrating. Sure would be nice if there were easy answers, but, I think that the topic's covered pretty, in depth and clearly, and at least brings up some great questions. And if our audience wants to revisit again, this story and the others that we've covered today, go to errorsofenchantment.com and you'll find the blog postings from Paul on that site. And of course, there's information at riograndefoundation.org. By the way, Rio Grande Foundation is a nonprofit organization, you'll find ways you can support what they're doing on their website. Paul, any more on the Chaco buffer?
Yeah, one quick thing is, I like to look at the political aspect of this at least a little bit because, we have our five-member delegation all pushing a specific direction, limiting power of the local community in terms of the Navajo specifically. And I just think that there would be a far different reaction in the media if you had, say, five Republicans in a congressional delegation trying to enact some kind of policy that was detrimental to and opposed by a minority group, especially like a Native American group. I just think this issue, if you're listening to the show and this is the first you're hearing about it, it's not a surprise because that's the way the media tend to operate. They tend not to question the narrative, especially when it fits their own ideological persuasion. And the same can be said for the Holtec nuclear facility we talked about early in the program. This is another one that's, you know, Carlsbad residents and Hobbs residents are certainly not Navajo. There's certainly some down there, but they're not of the same intersectional status, if you will. But they support what they see as economic development in their community, and they're being told no by the powers that be here in New Mexico on that issue. And then here we have the Navajo surrounding Chaco Canyon who want to develop their own mineral interest, see the return of that, and boost their own living standards. Some of the poorest people in the entire country reside on tribal lands on the Navajo Res. So I think it is worth noting that these are two different but parallel issues that our congressional delegation, our governor, are trying to stop their own people from experiencing wealth and prosperity. We need to get that people of that ilk out of the way.
We got about 10 minutes before the top of the hour. We're going to take a quick break. And hey, we're going to come back and let you know, we talk about these lists that New Mexico are on. We found one that we're number one on, and we're going to get back and talk to that issue right after the break on ABQ Connect.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect. There's still time to join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE. ABQ Connect.
All right, we're in the middle of a conversation with Paul Gessing of the Rio Grande Foundation covering various topics and issues. And if you heard part of or some or you missed earlier parts of the show, much of what we've covered, if not all, will be found at errorsofenchantment.com. And before we went to the break, total transparency. Yeah, I did my best to keep you through the break and let you know we found a list where New Mexico was number one, but it's not a good thing, is it, Paul?
Well, definitely not when it comes to illegal drug use. And this is a Wallet Hub report. My organization, we don't necessarily focus on the ins and outs of drug use, but what we do focus on is policies coming out of Santa Fe that might, say, impact all of us in the form of higher taxation while not actually solving the problem that they claim to solve. And, nobody wants to be number one on the list of most illegal drug use. That's not a good list, unfortunately. One of the other lists that have been discussed recently during the session is that we also have a lot of alcohol-related problems. And if you have illegal drug problems, alcohol problems fit right in there, and it's very unfortunate. And the reasons for that are very significant and deep. There's cultural challenges, there's economic challenges, there's education challenges, there's hopelessness challenge, there's social isolation, all of those things and more fit into this particular problem. But as you'll recall, Steve, it hasn't been that long since the legislature passed a tax increase, vetoed by, of all people, Governor Lujan Grisham, that would have increased the tax on alcohol, supposedly for the purposes of addressing our alcohol issues. And I have thoughts and proposals and ideas for addressing our illegal drug use and our alcohol issues, but illegal drugs are already illegal. There's not many more things that you can do. You can always create more harsh sentences or something, but raising taxes on alcohol in a state that has the propensity and the unfortunate conditions that so many people find themselves in, raising the tax isn't going to change that problem. So what I'm getting at here is that It's a real problem. It is a challenge for all of us. It's a spiritual challenge, and this is
I've said more times than not, you know, more times than I can count, I should say, when this kind of stuff comes up, and we, you know, again, go back to banging our head on the wall. How do you fix it? Well, a lot of the problems that we talk about—the homelessness, the crime, the illicit drug use, the alcoholism—the answer is Jesus. As you said, Paul, it is a spiritual issue, and that doesn't mean someone who accepts the gospel necessarily is going to discontinue having the struggle. However, Jesus is the answer, and there's nothing he can't help you through.
I would only add to that it's also about finding a like-minded group of people to be with in fellowship and praise to be a part of that, whether it's Calvary Church or somewhere else that you can find that. People who have good, close friends who have their best interests in mind.
Right.
Nobody says they're leading perfect lives.
A support group.
But they are much less likely to be tied up in serious drug problems or serious drinking problems. There's no 100% in this world, but
we're human and we all have issues. And what you say is true. Do not forsake the gathering of the brethren. And together we can sharpen one another. Iron sharpens iron. And you mentioned it in the list you went through, Paul. You said hope. And in Christianity, there is a confident expectation in Christ. When that hope is mentioned in the Bible, that's what we're talking about. A little bit off topic there, but I did want to make sure, you know, as we address all these issues, that we remind our listeners. And, you know, if you stay tuned and listen through the day, and you'll be equipped with the message of Christ and find a hope in the content that we deliver to you. This again is just indication of some of the things that are happening in our state and things we should be concerned about praying for and in ways that we can be wise as a serpent and gentle as a dove, have an impact on our legislature and what they're doing about these issues.
Yeah, absolutely. And we need to not only hold our elected officials accountable, but be informed citizens ourselves and not necessarily look for easy solutions to a lot of the problems. And easy solutions could be as simple as using a drug or going out and drinking and doing that kind of thing. But we need to try to build our own lives and our own networks and real solutions for our own problems. And that's a responsibility that a lot of people just would rather push off.
All right, Paul, we got about 2 minutes. Did you want to head towards this blog on Virgin Galactic?
Yeah, sure. Let's finish with something a little more fun and upbeat. Hopefully. You never know.
All right. It is. What have they been here, like 10 years or so?
The Spaceport America facility, funded by our taxpayer dollars, has been open now for 11 years, actually opened October 11 years ago. And, Virgin Galactic announced this week, on Monday actually, that in late May, they are going to launch 4 Virgin Galactic employees on their next mission. It's been a while. The last manned mission that this company undertook was, as you'll recall, July of 2021, when Richard Branson and another group of Virgin Galactic employees went up at Spaceport America. And it was a moderately successful mission. They did go off course. They got dinged by the FAA and some other issues. But they're saying this mission in late May, and then they're going to go with the Italian Air Force group, paid customers, the first paid customers, potentially in late June. They have, as a entity, Virgin Galactic has missed deadline after deadline, but they are also a publicly traded company now, and they are feeling the heat from their investors. I'm sure of it. So I hope that they have a successful launch. I hope that they get somewhere with this nascent industry of kind of space tourism, and we'll all be watching together. So
yeah.
By the next time we've talked, they theoretically will have launched.
I hope it goes well. And sorry to cut that one short, okay. Paul. To find the complete blog on that, by the way, again, go to errorsofenchantment.com. You'll find that in a lot of the topics we covered today. Paul, thank you so much for the work you put into this. And, hey, God willing, let's do this again next week or next month.
Thank you. Take care.
ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KLYT.